This is Bhagavad Gita as it is, 9th chapter, text 19. Tapamyaham aham varsham nigranam yutsrajani cha amritam chaiva mrityuscha sadasaccha hamarjana Tapami, I give heat. Aham, I. Aham, I. Varsham, rain. Nigranami, withhold. Utsrajami, send forth. Cha, and. Amritam, immortality. Cha, and. Eva, certainly. Mrityuhu, death. Cha, and. Sat, spirit. Asat, matter. Cha, and. Aham, I. Arjuna, O Arjun. O Arjun, I give heat, and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality, and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. Purport. Krishna, by his different energies, diffuses heat and light through the agency of electricity and the sun. During summer season, it is Krishna who checks rain from falling from the sky. And then, during the rainy season, he gives unceasing torrents of rain. The energy which sustains us by prolonging the duration of our life is Krishna. And Krishna meets us at the end as death. By analyzing all these different energies of Krishna, one can ascertain that for Krishna, there is no distinction between matter and spirit. Or in other words, he is both matter and spirit. In the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, one therefore makes no such distinctions. He sees only Krishna in everything. Since Krishna is both matter and spirit, the gigantic universal form comprising all material manifestations is also Krishna. And his pastimes in Vrindavan as two-handed Shamsundar playing on a flute are those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tapamyaham aham varsham nigranami utsrajami cha amritam chaiva mrityus cha sadasach jaham arjuna. This is Krishna. He is everywhere and everything, and whatever is happening is finally happening due to Krishna, and it's all a manifestation of Krishna. Tapamyaham aham varsham. Krishna gives heat, and he gives rain, and withholds the rain also. The description given here is particularly reflects the Indian situation, where during the summer Krishna sends so much heat and withholds the rain, no rain. And then in the rainy season he sends so much rain. This is Krishna's arrangement. In some places, he always withholds the rain. No rain ever. And some places, always rain. England. So it's Krishna who is sending the heat, It's Krishna who's sending the rain. It's all his arrangement. We might think, no, I don't like the heat. We make our own arrangements artificially by air conditioning and heating systems and so on. But Krishna makes the natural arrangement in his own way, and particularly it favors the growth of vegetation, grains, and so on, and different things in different parts of the world, according to the way Krishna arranges. Some places are good for apples and peaches, some places are good for mangoes, some places are good for nothing. They're considered sinful places. The places where there's no rain at all are considered to be afflicted by sinful reactions. And anyway, sinful or pious, it's all sinful. All material world is a sinful place. But it's Krishna who's arranging everything. Sometimes he sends too much rain as a result of sinful activities. Sometimes a place is afflicted with rains and floods for which they're not prepared. Or sometimes drought and, again, difficulty. This is all Krishna's arrangement. He's the in charge of the prison house. Generally, if we cooperate with Krishna's arrangement, then there'll be sufficient, or there'll be regulated rain, regulated heat, everything regulated. In the Bhagavad Gita, annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad annasambhava. Annad bhavanti parjanyo, then yajna karma samudbhava. By sacrifice, there'll be regulated rainfall. And by regulated rain, there'll be production of food grains. And by food grains, everyone's life is sustained. And with annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad annasambhava yajyad bhavati parjanya. What is that? And again, by getting sufficient grains and ghee and everything, we can perform further sacrifices. Actually, life is meant for sacrifice or for worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that we're supposed to just grab everything and enjoy everything. We're trying, but that doesn't bring happiness. Rather, it brings depletion. Now they're in difficulty. Oil is running out. They've built a whole civilization on oil. And now they have to fight over diminishing supplies. This is their situation. So Krishna's arrangement is different. Perform sacrifice, cooperate with the demigods. What is that? Devat bhavyatani na?
Devan bhavyatani na. Deva bhavyantuvaha.
Parasparam.
Devan bhavyatani na. Deva bhavyantuvaha. Parasparam bhavyantaha.
Yena
shreyoham. Parama vapsita.
By cooperating with Krishna's arrangement, we'll please the demigods also. Well, just like when the prisoners are cooperative, the prison authorities become kindly disposed. Or in the school, when the teachers see that the students are well behaved, they're studying nicely, then the teachers become pleased and they make different arrangements to make the students also enliven the students. So in the same way, when the demigods see that these living entities are following the human beings. Living entities in general, they just follow their nature. But the human beings are using their expanded independence for engaging in devotional service to the Lord, following the Vedic way of life. The demigods become happy also. The demigods also become happy. And so they also supply sufficient water, sufficient sunshine, sufficient everything. So that we have a natural way of life with which to meet our physical necessities, all necessities, and make spiritual progress. And we use those facilities, the demigods send facilities, and we use those again. Now more yajna, more devotional service. By devotional service we have enough of everything, and then whatever we get, we'll again use for devotional service. Prabhupada expressed this in terms of money. Said that every day we should make $1 million and spend $1 million. Again, mobile check, third mobile check, please. No mobiles. In the spiritual world, there are no mobiles. Still want to go? There were no mobiles 30 years back. Maybe 30 years from now there will also be no mobiles. We don't know. Or else 30 years from now they'll be planted in your brain and you won't be able to turn them off. This is called progress. Tapamyaham maham varsham nigranami utsrajami cha. It's Krishna's arrangement. What is going on? It's all right, I guess they're far enough away that they're allowed to have mobiles way in the back. Bhamyaham maham varsham nigranam utsrajami cha. So the devotees see Krishna's hand behind everything and they're grateful that Krishna has sent some heat, Krishna has sent rain, Krishna is sending everything. Even if we're not grateful, even if sometimes it's too much heat or too much rain, a devotee is not resentful. The devotee thinks that it's Krishna's business, that for our sinful activities we probably should have had five times as much excess rain and five times as much excess heat. It's just we're getting a little something. The devotee, under even most adverse circumstances, continues to offer obeisances to Krishna from within the core of his heart. He is not resentful of Krishna. And amritam chaiva mrityuscha. Amrita means not dying, living, mrityu, and amrita. Amrita means not dying, but living. And amrita also means nectar. The demigods are supposed to drink nectar by which they live for thousands and thousands of years. Or just to be alive, we think, is nectar. Anyone narrowly escapes some car accident or something, that How are you grateful to be alive? Just to live is considered to be nectar. But for a devotee, death is equally welcome. Death is also Krishna. Life is Krishna, and death is also Krishna. When Krishna comes as death, that's also all right. From one point of view, death means getting out. That we don't need to prolong our existence in this body, although we're attached to it. But death means, anyway, it was expected that we're going to have to leave. And when we leave, then we're in Krishna's hands. We're always in Krishna's hands, actually. But we place ourselves in Krishna's hands. At the time of death, our aspiration is, materialist is trying to escape death at any cost. Hiranyakashipu, by severe tapasya, he's trying to ensure that he won't die, which is impossible. Or now the modern Hiranyakashipus are trying by medical science to ensure that they can go on living. I had an aunt who developed something, cancer or something like that. And she was told that if they removed three quarters of her stomach and, like, you know, a whole batch of her gastronomical tract, she could live for another maybe 6 months or so, 6 or 8 months. So she was, but that operation is not that everyone gets to have it. There's a waiting list and there's priorities and there's whatever there is, but you don't always get it. So she was just desperate that somehow or other she could have that operation. She was an old lady. She must have been 70-something. And what's the use of living like that with no digestive system? And anyway, what are you going to get out of your last 8 months that you didn't, you know, if you didn't get it by now, chances of your getting it in the next 8 months are not very high, whatever it is that you want. And finally she got the operation, and then she died after, you know, whatever the time was. But what's the use, somehow or other, to stay alive? It's not possible to stay alive, and even, you know, to stay alive in that condition is not very pleasing. So a devotee, Krishna gave me life, Krishna will also finish off this life. Life is Krishna, death is also Krishna. Both sides are Krishna. Prabhupada told how there was some incident, there was some war going on. I forget which one, maybe it was Second World War. And they were having blackouts in Calcutta. And the advice was, the warning from the government was that when they sound the sirens, then you should turn off all the lights and go down to the shelter and hide out, go for safety. And Prabhupada was sitting eating kachoris when the sirens went off. And he just went on eating his kachoris. Anyway, he just went on. He thought that all these bombs going off, it's like the universal form. So that's also Krishna. Gigantic universal form, spectacular display. So all these bombs are going off, making lots of sound and light and destruction also. So it's like the universal form. If Krishna wants to kill me in the form of Vishwarup, then the Prabhupada used to quote, Vake Krishna Marike, Marike Krishna Vake. Whoever Krishna wants to protect, who can kill? And whoever Krishna wants to kill, who can protect? So a devotee is surrendered to Krishna. Amritam Chaiva Mrityushcha. Krishna is life and Krishna is death. Sadasach Chaha Marjana. And he's matter and he's spirit also. Sad means that which exists. Nasato vidite pavo napavo vidite sataha. Ubayora pidrishtontas tvanios tatvadarshi. The tatvadarshis, the persons who actually see the truth, have concluded by studying everything up to the end that that which is sat or existent has no beginning and end. Na asato vidite bhava. And that which is non-existent has no has a beginning and end. It's not really, that which has a beginning and an end is not actually existent. Existent means permanent. Just like we consider a dream to have no real existence, because it just comes and goes. Prabhupada said there's a night dream and a daydream. The dream that we're in while we're awake also has a beginning and an end. So it also has no substantial existence. It's called Maya. The so-called existence in which we're situated now, in which this is my country, this is my wife, these are my children, this is my home, these are my problems, these are my assets. This has no real existence. It's like the existence in a dream. This is my kingdom, this is my whatever. That has no substantial existence. So the existence that we are in right now, while awake, also has no substance to it, although it appears very substantial. So it's called asat, or temporary. So temporality is the quality of matter. Jatasvihi dhruvam mrityur dhruvam jatasvihi. The body has a beginning, the body has an end. This is the nature of matter. And spirit has no destruction ever. The soul is always existing, and matter is never existing. It's not substantially existing. But here Prabhupada indicates that matter and spirit are both manifestations of Krishna. Even the illusion is a manifestation of Krishna. I think it's said that the illusory energy is like the smile of the Supreme Lord in the universal form. Isn't there something like that? The Maya is also a manifestation of Krishna, just as the clouds are also a manifestation of the sun. The clouds are also a manifestation of the sun. Or Prabhupada gives the example that in the government there are different departments: transportation department, prison department, college department. So from the government side, it's all the same. The government doesn't favor the college department and disfavor the Department of Prisons. From the government side, it's all part of the state. And the government treasury is one. This is designated as prison money, this is education money, this is the transportation budget. But from the government's, from one point of view, it's all money. And it's simply applied differently, but it's the same substance. Money is money. It's not that when you look at it, there's, you know, one kind of bill for transportation, one kind of bill for prisons, one kind of note for colleges. It's the same cash, but it's used in different, applied in different ways. That you, on the highway, your money, your tax dollars at work. So your tax dollars are at work, someplace building a road, someplace building a prison, sometimes building a college. It's the same tax dollars. So Krishna's energy is everywhere. Where whatever we see is Krishna's energy. And because Krishna and his energy are non-different, Krishna is everywhere. And the devotee sees everywhere Krishna. Therefore, Srila B. R. Sridhar Maharaj used to say that the whole environment is friendly. The whole environment is friendly because it's Krishna, and Krishna is Suridam Sarvabhutana, the best friend of all living entities. Let's see what else is here. This is non-duality. In the advanced stage, one makes no distinction. That Krishna is Krishna. Whether he's manifest as Amrita or Mithu, whether he's withholding the rain or sending forth the rain, whatever he does, he's Krishna. He's Krishna. And the devotee sees Krishna everywhere, depends on Krishna everywhere, thinks of Krishna everywhere, serves Krishna everywhere. This is the life of a devotee. Are there some questions?
When soul leaves the body, is there an explanation of what exactly happens between the visuals? I mean, is it just a second of going, or are there many stages?
When the soul leaves the body, is there an explanation of?
Of how it goes to the next.
How it goes to the next stage? Yes. What kind of explanation? What do you want?
The sense of. Like, suppose you thought about Krishna and dying. Are there any other stages in the subtle stage before you enter the spiritual world?
Yes, if you read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you'll find how the devotee leaves this material world. Also in Srimad Bhagavatam it's described, but the essence is by detaching himself from everything. If we're holding on to something, then we're going to stay because we're holding on to it. But if we're simply holding on to Krishna and dropping everything else, then we just watch everything go by. It's described that Dhruva Maharaj, when he left this world on a Vaikuntha airplane, just watched the whole world recede behind him. The sages were throwing flowers and the heavenly planets were going by, and it was, you know, like in an airplane. You get in the airplane and you watch Dubai disappear, then you watch the United Arab Emirates disappear. You know, everything just goes behind you. So, in a similar way, a devotee who's detached from the material world just leaves it all behind. But if one still has attachments, then one has to stay. Because it's the mind that creates the next life. That's described in the 15th chapter, that the mind is subtle and it holds different conceptions of life, the way that the air carries aromas. Let's see where that is. Yeah, where is that? There it is. Yeah. 15:8. Shariram yadavapnoti yachchapyut kramati shuddha. Grihit vaitani sanyati vayurgantani vashya shrotram chakshusparshanam cha rasanam kranam eva cha adishtaya manaschayam vishayan upasevate utkramantam stitam vapi punjanam vagunanditam vimudha nanupashanti pashanti gana chakshusha. The Ishra, the soul, is the also described as Ishra, the living entity within the body, he picks up different conceptions Vayurgantan Ibhashya, the way the air picks up different aromas. And the air travels over these waste, what do they call them? These containers, the big...
Dumpsters,
right. When it travels over a dumpster, you go by, you know it, because the air has picked up the smell of the dumpster. And if you walk by some nice place, a garden, then the air has picked up the scent of the flowers. So the air, although subtle, carries these subtle scents along with it. And in the same way, the mind is a reservoir of all sorts of impressions, ideas, attractions. And if the mind is full of thoughts of sense gratification, then that's one kind of scent. And if the mind is full of thoughts of Krishna, that's another kind. So if the mind is affected by different impressions of material enjoyment, then srotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam kranam evacha adishtaya manashtayam vishayanupasevate. He picks up a particular kind of eye, a particular kind of ear, particular nose, particular, all the 10 knowledge gathering senses and active senses gathered around the mind. The mind is the starting place, and then surrounding the mind becomes the basis for picking up different kinds of senses. The Lord awards a different eye, a different ear. And you can see the different species of life are full of all sorts of different sorts of senses with which to enjoy different kinds of sense gratification. So someone gets a hog's body because he wanted to enjoy it like that. So he gets a certain kind of tongues, certain kind of ears, certain kind of everything. And all these different kinds of bodies, some of them quite strange and weird from our point of view. But they have different facilities for enjoying different kinds of sense gratification. Someone gets a bear's body and sleeps for, what, 6 months in a year or something, goes into hibernation. So that they wanted that. They wanted a particular kind of life. And according to what they deserve, they got that. Then Krishna says, Udgramantam stitam vapi bhunjanam vagunanvitam vimudha nanupashanti pashanti ganachakrusha. How the living entity is leaving his body under circumstances, how he is enjoying in accordance with the modes of material nature, the fools can't see. Vimudha. Vimudha means the big fools. Na anupashanti, because they don't see by following. Anupashyanti means seeing by following. That's the actual way to see. Pashyanti, gyanachakshusha, those who have eyes of knowledge, they see all this. How do you get eyes of knowledge? By following. By following those who can see, we also can see. And those who don't want to follow won't see. Na vimudha, na anupashyanti, they won't see. Because it's subtle, you can't see it just by looking. It requires guidance, it requires spiritual enlightenment. Another question?
Can individual identify what rasa?
Louder, please.
Can individual devotee identify his own rasa with Krishna?
Can a living entity identify his own rasa with Krishna? Yes, Jivar Sharupoi Krishnar Nityadas. His rasa is that he's a servant of Krishna.
No, but they are in five different rasas.
In the advanced stage, those things are revealed. Not in the beginning stage. Just like a child, 5 years old, 7 years old, wants to know what sex is like. He's not going to understand it. Yeah, you can explain it to him. can give him a book about it. I mean, still, even show him a movie, he still would understand it. Right? Because he's a child, he's not mature. And when he's grown up, he'll automatically understand it. So to try to understand what is my particular relationship with Krishna in the immature stage is pointless. Or it can lead to self-delusion also. An imagination, I'm imagining that I'm this and that. First we have to go step by step. The first thing is to get free from all sense gratification and mental speculation. Or we have to associate with the devotees and perform, follow the principles, regulative principles of devotional service, so that there will be anartha nivritti, freedom from material contamination, unwanted things within the heart. Then gradually these, we come to the higher stages. We develop attraction, attachment, asakti. Finally comes to bhava and prema. Now in the initial stages, there's no question of knowing any of these things. In the advanced stage, it will automatically be disclosed. Therefore, we're advised to follow the process step by step. When somebody donates blood, does his karma also pass on to the other person who uses that blood? No. It's not that, you know, if you committed murder and someone gets a blood transfusion, now he's responsible for murder. It's not like that. I've heard someplace, there's some karma, because now he's indebted to you for the blood and so on. I've heard something about that a little, but not very clearly. But it's not that when you get a blood transfusion, then, you know, the whole karma of the previous, of the other person is, you know. Otherwise we could, you know, approach the saintly persons and please donate blood, you know. Get a transfusion and become self-realized. That would be nice. But it doesn't work like that. We need a different kind of transfusion. Wow, this is enough. Is this the blood drive is going on right now? Is that what this is? Okay, this is the same question. Should we do it? Should we not do it? I'm not going to weigh in on that issue. Any more blood drive questions? Can we eat ice creams, homemade and or from ice cream parlors? That's the questions, right? Well, certainly homemade. You can make ice cream and offer it to Krishna. That's perfectly good. It's sattvic, it's milk, basically milk, some sugar. Perfectly good preparation. Prabhupada also sometimes cook ice cream. So there's no harm. Going to ice cream parlors for sense gratification is not a very good policy. Like giving classes, you get to see every kind of handwriting in the world. Generally, it is understood that Mata Parvati is subordinate to Lord Shiva, like Sita to Ram. Radharani is pleasure potency of Lord Krishna, and why the name of subordinate comes first, like Sita Ram, Uma Mahesh, Lakshmi Narayan, Radha Krishna, Radha Madhav, etc. Is there any specific reason behind this? Yeah, ladies first, right? Yes, the energy is always addressed first. We approach Krishna through his energy. We're approaching Krishna through his energy. That's our formula for success. That first we approach the energy of the Lord for getting the mercy of the Lord. Is that all right? Sri Ram said, Janani Janma Bhumishcha. How we devotees should act during any emergency on our country. What's the translation? Janani Janma Bhumishcha? Janma Bhumi means the place of one's birth. Janani means wife, mother. Mother country. How should devotees act during any emergency in your own country? Well, you have different alternatives. One is you can get the heck out of your country. Sometimes quite a good idea. The more adventurous can stay in the country and preach. When there's some emergency, that may be a time for preaching, although usually during the emergencies there's not much opportunity for preaching. Preaching comes after the emergency. But you may stay. Go or stay. But the devotee depends on Krishna. Otherwise it's not my country. Every country is my country. Or none of these countries are my country. Janani Janma Bhumi. Let's see, first, why does the dead body appear heavier than otherwise when alive? Well, death is heavy, you know. When it's alive, you get a little cooperation when you're trying to carry your body. The body is dead, there's no one left to cooperate. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Apuryamanama chala pratishtam. Sometimes during tsunami or hurricane, water of levels of sea increases. Please explain. You want a meteorological explanation? When it rains, the water rises, you see. I don't know what else to say about it. Otherwise, anyway, the tsunami of Krishna consciousness is welcome. That tide rises. We'll be very happy. Break down the levees of material attachment and illusion and flood the whole place with Krishna consciousness. That kind of tsunami will be very good. Can Matajis apply Tilak on all the places like Prabhu's? Yes, they can. If money is invested in the market where you get a higher rate of return, the stock market, will that lead to violating one of the regulative principles? Yeah. If you're particularly those who are playing high-risk stocks are basically gambling. If you're the stock pickers who are basically speculating, this is going to go up, this is going to go down, and throwing their money, not that much difference between, for them, throwing their money on a horse or throwing their money on a stock or throwing their money on, any kind of betting. So that's highly speculative. And it creates the kind of life where, you could become a millionaire overnight, you could become destitute overnight. So it unhinges the mind. The mind is thinking, I'm already in my palace, as the result of where my stock is going to be in the next, when it rises. But that kind of engagement is not very good for peace of mind or even stability in terms of one's existence, that you get, as the roller coaster ride of the stock market. Now, there is another kind of investment where basically you know that these stocks are going to be pretty steady, and you're investing in stocks that have a performance over the last, 50 years, and basically all you really expect is that maybe you'll get bank rate and a little bit above. That may not be gambling. I don't have much to say about it. But, that sort of conservative investment where you're really not, it's not much of a gamble involved. It's simply, like everything's a gamble. If you put your money in the bank, you're gambling. Because you don't really know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen to the currency either. You put you're holding onto all this paper and you're gambling that the paper is going to still have value when you want to use it for something. So there's a certain amount of gambling in everything. You get in the elevator, you're gambling, and you really don't know what's going to happen. The stairs are a surer bet. But, so the whole material world, everything is chancy, everything is gambling. But then there are certain forms of action that are manifestly risky and speculative. So high-risk investments. And that's basically, even the stock advisors and so on, they have, I think, basically three categories. There's very ultra-conservative investment, then there's little medium, and then there's, highly speculative. And you're even advised that if you're dependent on that money for your existence, you can't invest it in that sort of way. That's risk capital, and it's high risk capital. So one should never kind of spend that money that way, because you never know if it's going to be there or not. But for devotees, it's not good, even if we're not dependent on that money, if it's what do they call it, expendable income or something like that. Better not to get involved in speculative gambling, because that is against our principles. Otherwise, conservative investment, as far as I can understand, is not a big deal.
On that same topic, gambling, can it be defined as a conscious effort when one is willing to lose money to make a windfall?
Can gambling be defined as a conscious effort where one is willing to lose money to make a windfall? Well, sometimes you're willing to lose money and it's not really speculative. In business, sometimes there are things that you do where you're losing money, but you know that you're investing in future gains, and it's not really very speculative at all. When you're building a customer base, for example, you may be spending more money than you're bringing in, but if you have a sound business plan, then you expect that that money is not, you know, you're not just throwing it out there and expecting your money to come back. You have a careful plan, and you have a history, and you know that by investing this money within 6 months, I should see this kind of result. Of course, all business may be, to some extent, speculative. You invest in an education, and you're only speculating that when you graduate, there'll be a job for you. Right? You invest, they invest in America, $20,000, $50,000 plus, a couple $100,000 before you're out of there. And they're typically, if their parents aren't rich, they're taking student loans and all of that kind of stuff. And it's a gamble. No guarantee that you're going to get a job. And very often, what happens is that, you know, you've gone into some hot occupation, and by the time you've graduated, so is everyone else. Right? IT was like that at a certain point. It was so hot that everybody got into it, and by the time everyone got into it, there were no jobs around. So much gambling is there, in this way or that way. A careful definition of gambling. Anyway, high-risk enterprises where you have no real assurance that your return will be there. And typically where the challenge, the thrill, what makes you do it is the prospect of high returns for small investment, but with high risk. So that's the general understanding of gambling. We could perhaps refine it further. But that, you know, that way all the sports gambling, the lottery, the horses, cards, dice, slot machines, roulette, all of that stuff is gambling. High risk investments, gambling. Marriage. That one's allowed somehow. In case we are getting the dream of relatives who died, does it mean that the soul didn't rest in peace? What can we do? No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It may mean that you're not in peace. But the best thing for all our relatives is Krishna consciousness. If we're Krishna conscious, then all our relatives, even those departed relatives, will benefit. The Shraddha ceremony is also there for the departed ancestors, so they get the benefit of prasadam, blessings of Krishna. But the best thing is that if one becomes a serious devotee, then all the relatives benefit. Please explain the concept bhakti comes from bhakti. Yes, because bhakti, no amount of pious activity can bring one to the stage of bhakti. We can perform pious activities for lifetimes and lifetimes and more lifetimes and never get bhakti. Or we can do speculative, philosophical speculation for lifetimes and still not come to the point of bhakti. It depends. Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Latabhij. One has to get the seed of devotional service from another devotee. So bhakti is not caused by gyan. It's not caused by karma. It's not brought about. It's not a result of any of these things. But to get bhakti, one has to get bhakti from a devotee of Krishna. And then once we get the seed of devotional service, the process for cultivating that seed is again bhakti. Hearing, chanting. This is bhakti. And the result of bhakti is more bhakti. Yes. There, in that sense, our process, I think we talked about this the other day, the process and the result are the same. Usually, we're used to the idea that you do one thing and then you get another result. But in Krishna consciousness, the process and the result are the same. Just in yoga, first you perform these sitting postures and exercises and so many things, and then you get samadhi. Or in karma, you do hard work and then you get money. But in Krishna consciousness, what we do and what we get are the same. Our goal is to be engaged in the service of Krishna, and our process is to be engaged in the service of Krishna. So in that sense, we get the goal in the very beginning. It's just a question of coming to the mature stage of realization. Prabhupada's example is the green mango and the ripe mango. It's just a question of ripening. We hear of many advanced devotees' downfall. So what chance we newcomers have against Maya? Most of the time we feel so helpless. Yeah, we hear about so many devotees who fall down, but then we hear about so many devotees who succeed also. And even the ones who fall down will eventually succeed. Bharat Maharaj fell down and still he succeeded. Bilalangal Thakur fell down and still he succeeded. So even if a devotee falls down, that's also there in the first canto. And Narad Muni says that even if the devotee falls down, he's not like an ordinary karmi, because he can't help remembering that taste of Krishna consciousness. And the Lord also doesn't forget his service. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Arjuna has the same doubt, that seems like a person who takes up Krishna consciousness and fails is nowhere. At least if he'd stayed a good karmi, he would have gotten material enjoyment. But he gave up the material enjoyment for devotional service or for to practice yoga, and he fell down from yoga or devotional service, so now he's nowhere. He doesn't have devotional service and he doesn't have material enjoyment. So he's like a cloud that's just torn apart and has no position. So Krishna says no. The person who does something good is never overcome by evil. And neha vikamanashosti pratyabhaya nividyate. Svapamapyasya dharvasya trayate mahatobhaya. Even a little endeavor is never can save one from the greatest danger, and whatever one does is never lost. So even if one falls, still whatever progress he's made is his permanent credit. In the sixth chapter, Krishna explains that the yogi who falls down, depending on what stage he's in, if he's in the less advanced stage, prapya punya kritam lokanu shitva shashvati sama shuchinam shimitam gehe yoga brashta pijayate partanaibe hanamutra vinashastasya vidyate nahi kalyana kritkas chid durgatim tapidashi. So the prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati sama, the yogi or devotee who falls down, he may go to the heavenly planets and live there for a long time. And then, shuchinam shrimatam gehe yoga brashta. Yoga brashta means a fallen yogi or devotee. Abhijayate, he takes his birth, shuchinam shrimatam gehe, either in the home of wealthy people or Brahmins. Shuchinam means Brahmins, shuchi, brahminical family, or srimat, they have money. Suchinam srimatam gehe. Or, if he was more advanced and fell down, atava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam. He may take his birth in a family of transcendentalists. He may take birth in a devotee family, spiritually inclined family. Etat hi durlabhataram loke janma yadidrasham. That kind of birth is very rare. Therefore, those who are becoming parents of children in Krishna consciousness, they should see to the welfare of these children. They're not ordinary. They're fortunate to take that birth. It must be on account of their previous progress in Krishna consciousness. And tatratam bhuti samyogam labhate parvadehikam yatate chatata bhuyo sangsito kurunandana purvabhya senate naiva shriyate hyavashopi saha jigyasurapi yogasya shabda brahmati vartate prayatna jatamanas tu yoga shangshuta kilbisha aneka janma san siddhas tato yati parangita. So again, in that birth, he revives his previous consciousness from the previous birth. Therefore, we see sometimes a person, you know, he sees a Sankirtan party, and I have one godbrother, Anuttama. He was like a student in school, and he saw the Sankirtan party, and it was like immediately, you know, I have to do this. I have to get it. And then he actually, while he was still at school, he shaved his head, became a devotee, everything. Since then, he's engaged in devotional service. So sometimes, right away, a person just wants to, he becomes attracted. What is this? And some others, you know, what are you going up? They're crazy. You know what? You want to talk to those people? You know, that means he has a deficit of previous credit. But the fallen yogi immediately, sometimes we see immediately someone right away starts chanting, right away he chants 16 rounds, follows the four regular principles, reads all the books, enthusiastic, makes a lot of progress, he kind of bubbles up to the top very quickly. That means previous credit. Previous credit. Priyate, yavashopisa. Practically, avasha means without any effort on his part, or helplessly. It's not under his control. He's just attracted. He's automatically attracted to the devotional principles on account of his previous attraction. Jigyasur api yogasya. So he very quickly comes to the transcendental platform. Prayatnad, and by his endeavor, prayatnad yatamanas tu yogi samshuta kilvisha, he becomes freed from all sinful reactions. Completely freed from all sinful reactions. Aneka janma, and after many, many births, sangsiddha, he becomes perfect. And tato yati parangitam, he goes back to Godhead. Oh, better not to go through all that. Better to finish our business in this one lifetime. But even if one falls down, still, it's not a loss. Total loss. It means he'll pick up from where he left off. Just it will take more time. And speaking of time, about time to stop. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.